gentlemen, welcome to another episode of Newborn Libertarian. And we have somebody new on. I'm excited. So, my friend, go ahead and introduce yourself.
Oh, my name is Ron Harpaz. Thank you for not trying to say that name. That comes from another language. I'm from Israel. I am a recent convert back into libertarianism. And I say back because I think that I have been a libertarian since I was about 2 and have since been co-opted by the left. What happened with me was really, there was no public political party that was very, very, very strong for peace in Israel, except for the Labor Party, the main left party, which was headed at the time by Yitzhak Rabin. And so I sort of attached myself to that side because I'm a true believer in peace. And only recently have I figured out that they're all the goddamn same. And there's only one side that consistently preaches and attempts to seek and find peace. And not just between nations, but between people. And that's libertarianism.
That's so very true.
So that's where I am right now.
Yeah, I've learned not to try to pronounce many people's last names without asking first, because my last name always confuses people, and I've been called all sorts of weird things throughout my life before they get it right, so I just decided to let you do it.
I definitely don't know how to pronounce it yet.
I won't make you guess.
I can guess that it's Sheng.
Yep. There you go. You could be number 50 out of all 33 of my years of my life that got that right. Only 50 people on the first try.
Okay. I do a lot of guessing at pronunciations, having had to basically autodidact my way into English. So. Yeah.
I'm guessing, so one of the things that before we hit record on this is that we have in common that we came from the left to libertarianism, which...
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's probably more common than some people think, but it's not like you run into a lot of leftists running around as libertarians that, you know, I guess...
Yeah, it's hard. It's a hard thing to really find, because leftism is a very all-encompassing philosophy whereby you sort of give yourself over to the state, and the state gives itself over to you, supposedly. And it's not until you realize that they don't really care about you, about you at all, and that you understand that the only person you should care about is yourself and your loved ones, that you can fall away from that sort of perspective. And that if you really do care about other people, just the general other people, that liberty is the best way to guarantee their happiness and their prosperity.
Yeah. That's very true. I mean, everybody, and it's my favorite. I'm pretty sure you've been around it. People are like, oh, libertarians don't care about people. They want you to pull yourself up by your bootstraps and all that good stuff. I'm like, and somehow you're more virtuous by wanting to have the state steal money out of everybody's wallets against their will, whether they like it or not, and not give you transparency as to where every single penny goes, because if it was really benevolent, it'd be transparent, and we'd be able to see all of our charity dollars going to help everyone around the world. And people was like, well, why would you want to see that? Shouldn't you just believe it goes everywhere? I'm like, I don't know. Is anybody realizing that the government is a gigantic machine, supposed business of whatever, and they produce nothing, and they actually don't make money on their own? They literally are funded by our tax dollars. Does anybody find that weird?
Yeah, it's a weird thing, because I come from the left like you, I always am somehow able to find that leftist part of me. So I'm able to say, you know, they won't say that that we're mean because we just don't like poor people. They'll say that we're being too self-centered, that we find our personal prosperity more important than the prosperity of the group. And the counter-argument to that, obviously, is there is no prosperity for the group. Individuals who make efforts can find prosperity, and they can share that prosperity if they want to. But it's not morally justifiable to force them to do the thing that you want to do specifically just because you find that the morally correct thing to do.
Yeah. I was like, and at that point, their head explodes.
Yeah, it's a hard switch to make, and it's hard for me, and it caused me. I mean, I became a libertarian because I disconnected from the left because they've gone way too far for me, and unlike some people who I won't name because they're way too famous to be to be mentioned by some nobody like me. I do not content to still be of the left while every single one of my principles is libertarian.
Yeah, true.
I'm sure that you know like two or three of the people that I'm talking about.
That's a good possibility, I do. Well, the topic that we were going to discuss for this podcast is the election, and I know this podcast hasn't really gotten too deep in the election. Before we get into the specific person we were going to really talk about, of course we have to talk about the news about the Libertarian Party and how Gary Johnson and Bill Weld will not.
How disappointing, how sad. How much of a missed opportunity this one was.
Yeah, I wanted the best for the Libertarian Party, but as soon as they started trying to lean as far left as possible to pander for votes and then kept, shooting themselves in the foot and, and then as soon as my favorite is to watch the news now, it's great because as soon as they started realizing that Gary and Weld were taking votes away from Hillary and not Trump, they were like, oh my goodness, we hate these people. We got to get Jill Stein and Gary out. Not saying that's the only reason that Gary and Weld got, didn't make it to 15% threshold. But, as soon as they find out the third parties are inconvenient to not taking the votes from who they want because the media is definitely leftist controlled at this point, then all of a sudden, oh, the third parties aren't so cutesy anymore. So it just, there was the perfect storm of Gary Johnson and Weld just kind of taking all the wrong tactics, just moving farther away from libertarianism, and then the media realizing that they were taking votes away from Hillary. They just chose the completely wrong tact.
And I wonder what the strategy there was, because you're obviously barking up the wrong tree if you're gonna try and get libertarians and staunch leftists to be on the same ballot.
Yeah.
Those are incompatible philosophies. I mean, I think they're the right, the conservative, so-called Republicans, have been basically leftists for a long time. Mm-hmm. They've just been a lot more clearly warmongering and a lot more clearly religious, but essentially they're statists.
Yeah.
And they've been so for a long time, since halfway through Reagan. And besides, the Republican Party coming from Lincoln, I'm sure that you've read or heard of Judge Knapp's argument against Lincoln.
Yeah.
It's essentially the Republican Party, though with good intentions, is a product of statist sin, is born in statist sin. So we shouldn't be surprised that it has become what it has always been. But it is a shame that there is no big party that really can house libertarians under its tent, and that the party that supposedly holds libertarians under its tent is led by two people who wouldn't know liberty if it hit them on the side of the face.
Yeah, it's just, and I heard it more than once, and even some people that were dear to me and close to me, when I said, well, it's just really strange that they're deciding to lean so hard left. And I know there's somebody that was in the Jason Stapleton group that was saying, you just watch as this election goes on. They're like, if they could throw Ron Paul under the bus and trash him and get away with it, they will, because the more and more libertarians started, at first they were throwing ANCAPs under the bus and trying to say we were the ones trashing Gary. I was like, no, wait. I know a lot of minarchists having a fit. I'm like, stop trying to use us as your scapegoat. But then as soon as everybody was like, oh, Ron Paul, at least, even though he was a Republican, he could say some stuff that you were like, I can't believe he just said something that blatantly libertarian in the middle of a presidential debate. And people were like, oh my goodness, Democrats were suddenly caucusing for Ron Paul. And they were like, this guy's amazing. And people, you know, because you always get the line from people that are, you know, they're saying, oh, well, people can't handle pure libertarianism. You have to, like, give it to them in small doses. I'm like, and Ron Paul used to say stuff like, you know, I don't know how to live your life for you and stuff like that. I'm like, that's pretty pure libertarian right there. And,
I don't buy that argument at all. I think that people can't go for partial libertarianism. People need to understand that the state is unnecessary. It's unhelpful, if not directly damaging. And the free market is the only true pathway to peace and prosperity. If you can get them to understand that, they're already libertarian. If you can't get them to understand that, they'll never be libertarians. Because they'll always have the mentality that we're all born with, that the state is not only necessary, it is the only thing between us and utter chaos, and chaos in the bad sense, not in the anarchist sense.
Yeah, not in the... And it's just a really sad thing. People, you know, always are like, oh, well, I'm like, ANCAP's not necessarily saying that, you know, there wouldn't be any governing because, of course, human beings naturally will gravitate toward a community and have their own set of roles and that sort of thing. So it wouldn't be like everybody runs around like a vigilante, you know, with arrows on their back and all that sort of thing. Maybe there might be a few, but, you know, it's just the fact that people are so ingrained in wanting the state to take care of certain things or can't imagine their life without a state that they allow and vote in, you know, as much force as is allowed because they're so frightened. And they're willing to say, okay, we'll take some watered down libertarianism and some philosophy just because we're scared as heck about any changes. And I feel like because of that, they did start, and I'm seeing it still, they started throwing Ron Paul right under the bus. And I even heard a lot of people say stuff like, oh, well, they act like Ron Paul was like libertarian Jesus. And I'm like, if Ron Paul wouldn't have stormed the stage the way that he did, Gary Johnson would still be like a fart in the wind at this point because nobody would have even cared. I mean, because Ron Paul was one of those...
If only we could ignore that idiot.
Yeah, and
it's really depressing to me that in this year when you have basically a combat, a war between the statist left and the statist right, only libertarian even close to being on any ticket is part of the Constitution Party, which is like half the ballots in the United States.
Yeah, it's on my ballot. It's just
hold it. And good for you. But I do wonder about that, because I don't think that you can ever get a president from a party that doesn't hold seats in Congress. I don't think it's possible.
It's real.
I don't think it's possible that enough people will take seriously a candidate whose party has no seats in Congress or the Senate.
Yeah, this is why I constantly say to people, I'm like, liberty and growing liberty starts from the ground up, not the top down. We need to be focusing. And yeah, I understand, you know, if you want to run somebody in the presidency, you know, so you can get more people maybe Googling it or looking it up. But the focus really needs to be at the bottom to get more libertarians into state office and then eventually to U.S. Congress and getting people used to liberty, because now, everybody talking about how, you know, people aren't used to pure libertarianism. I'm like, oh yeah, you know how you get them used to it? Start running libertarians at the state level and have libertarians start working towards more liberty-oriented legislation on the district level. And as people realize the state is loosening their grip on their necks at the state level, they're like, I kind of like the fact that the government isn't all up in my bedroom and my pocket and all that stuff and isn't taxing the crap out of me. And once they start getting used to the freedom at the state level, suddenly they'll start wanting it farther up the ladder. So if you want to talk about people aren't ready for pure libertarianism, start at the state and local level and get them used to it there, because you really do need to have some of those people in the Congress if you're going to go in that direction. So I don't want to hear about this have watered down stuff that your president is saying. Start at the, you know, at the bottom and move upward.
Exactly. You need to, people need to be able to look at a ballot, see libertarian, and not think about that guy that took all his clothes off in the convention.
Oh God, yeah.
They need to be able to think. They need to be able to think of libertarians and think of someone who's actually doing stuff and by not messing things up, by leaving things well enough alone, getting things to work better.
Yeah.
And it's, we're under an illusion, and I know this because I come from the left, like you. I have been under the illusion for a long, long time that the efficacy of a Congress is measured by the amount of laws they pass. And I definitely know that I thought this because I got the idea from Rachel Maddow. I totally blame it on her, but it is entirely my fault that I accepted it.
Yeah, she...
And the more I it's always a shame, a bit of shamefulness looking back at the way I thought, because it's obviously so wrong. But obviously the efficacy of a Congress is can only be measured by the prosperity their reign generates, not by the amount of work they do. It's the mentality that creates make-work projects. It's just statist thinking. It's just the let's make work so people work. Let's mock Congress for taking days off because they need to campaign, because then they're not working. But if they're not going to do anything beneficial with the time that they do have, then why do we care if they're working or not?
Yeah, I'm like, oh, please take more days off. But speaking of Rachel Maddow, who was like my ex-girlfriend, like when I was first becoming a libertarian, I listened to her for, I think, still like a month. And then all of a sudden, as time went on, it felt like somebody was jabbing a needle into my eardrum or something like that. Because it's just, the more you understood the truth in libertarianism, I was like, I can't stand this leftist stuff. However, it was funny. I've been hearing the clips, because it's so strange that our leftist media is so frightened about a certain candidate we do have in the Republican Party that they started talking about a certain cartoon frog, that even Rachel Maddow brought it up, this cartoon frog, Pepe. Yes.
Man, I used to download that the podcast that they show of her every goddamn day.
Same here.
Every single goddamn day. And listen to it religiously, along with a bunch of Slate podcasts.
Oh, same here, too. I was a huge fan of Slate Political Gabfest. And at least there's some...
I still like them. I still like them as people. I just can't get back to them until this election is done.
Yes.
Because I could be interested in the things that they say, but it's so partisan right now. I just can't stand it. And I basically can only stand listening to Ben Shapiro and Andrew Klavan. Mm-hmm. Aside from actual libertarians, because they're the only people who say, no, this person sucks and this person sucks.
Yeah, I love that.
They're both kind of bad.
Yeah, they're not like trying to say, no, nothing this person does wrong. And like, you know, Ben Shapiro, I listen to Ben Shapiro too, and he's all like, well, I guess, you know, I might vote for Trump. I mean, I guess if that means there isn't a Hillary, but, you know, he doesn't sound enthusiastic at all. And he still has this, Trump sometimes says some good things, and then, oh, and here's a clip of him saying something completely stupid. And, you know, I'm like...
Yeah, I think there's nothing that more epitomizes why I listen to Ben Shapiro and why I don't listen to a lot of other people. He has a bit on his show that's really called Good Trump, Bad Trump.
Yeah.
So it's literally saying, okay, this guy, sometimes he does a good thing, sometimes he does a bad thing, and I'm genuinely happy when he has more good Trump than bad Trump, because then it's more likely that Hillary won't be in the White House, and I really, really, really don't want her in the White House.
Yeah.
I mean, I seriously would rather have Pepe in the White House than Hillary.
Yes. And it's funny when... Hillary did her speech against the alt-right and, you know, all that stuff. And then she's always talking about other vast right-wing conspiracies and stuff. And then now they're declaring war on a cartoon frog. And it's like, come on, guys.
it's really weird for Hillary Clinton to start talking about conspiracies against her. She's like, the most conspiring person to be in politics in the last 15 years.
You know, what was just real creepy is that as soon as I said right-wing conspiracy, my iPhone straight up Siri right then and tried to look up right-wing conspiracy. So apparently iPhone is the worst idea ever because that, okay.
Look, it's Tim Cook. Tim Cook's no lefty. We know he's a lefty.
Man, hacking the phone. Nobody say right-wing conspiracy near an iPhone, man. They got NSA, nice try, NSA. I'm turning this phone off. But, now getting into the topic that...
But what about Trump?
Yeah,
because we need to eventually talk about Trump and not just circle around that. That guy's a monster, and I mean that in both the good and the bad way. He just came into the system and broke it apart like no one since Ron Paul, really.
Yeah. Well, the one thing, though, I have to point out, as much as everybody is frightened because we don't really know which side of Trump will get if he's elected, what I find fascinating, and this still happens in libertarian circles too, is that everybody's so frightened of the words that Trump says that they start to attribute things that Hillary has already done to what Trump, like, there's no evidence that Trump has done or will do things like,
I want to push back on that a bit, because, you know, Bill Kristol and all his friends at National Review, those neocon dirtbags, and they've never done anything. They've only used words. And I'm perfectly okay with saying that they're terrible people and I don't want them anywhere near the White House. And so I'm perfectly okay with accepting criticism of Donald Trump based on things that he said, especially like the thing about the families of terrorists. Mm-hmm. However, you know, since we are actually kind of killing families of terrorists right now, maybe it's better that we have a president that actually talks about doing that and lays it all out there.
Yeah, I mean, we have a president that, you know, just tried to say, we're not droning a bunch of innocent people, because, you know, I mean, not saying...
He started off saying, we can't talk about this.
Yeah.
We have no... It's basically the no comment line. That's so evil.
Yeah.
You're killing people, you're killing civilians. It's not really in an attempt to kill terrorists, because if you're honing in on a cell phone and not like a satellite image of a terrorist, and how the hell do you know that there's anything in there?
Yeah.
It's not actually a war crime because of technicalities, but it maybe should be.
Yeah. Well, it's just, I can understand the panic for a lot of people, but I mean, it's kind of interesting to watch even libertarians getting caught in they're just thinking, oh my goodness,
and the let's talk about feelings sort of cycle.
Yeah, it's like, oh, I saw him, I saw his tweet, and then, you know, this scares me about his presidency. I'm like, you know, at this point, Gary helped throw away our chance to even get anybody near freedom. I didn't think he was going to become president. And any other candidates they could have had on the GOP that could have been tolerable, including Rand, are out of the way. And I'm like, Hillary has already done pretty much anything we can accuse Trump of. And heck, Trump get in the White House and totally like murder everyone and become the biggest statist jerk ever. That's a possibility, obviously. But it's just really funny to see even libertarians just like, oh, he said a sentence and I'm freaking out.
Yeah, like, I keep saying that, yeah, Trump is like half Hillary. There's a 50-50 chance he will do every evil thing that Hillary does, that Hillary definitely will do, and like a 10% chance that he'll add a couple more evil things on top of that. However, with Hillary, we definitely know a lot of evil shit that she will do given the opportunity and given the power, and we know that because she's already done it.
Yeah.
Do you remember the speech that he gave about Hillary, like, 3 months ago?
Yeah, I remember that one.
It had like one of the best lines ever about Hillary. She did Iraq, she voted for Iraq, she said Iraq was a mistake, and then she pushed for Libya.
Yeah, it's like, what the
heck? Exactly the same person.
Yeah. And the
good thing about Trump, whatever else you want to say about him, Trump changes. Mm-hmm. Trump is like the... If the free market worked in democracy, Trump would be the result of it.
That's true. But while we're talking about that, so the main thrust of this podcast is going to be, I guess, some sort of why Trump might be the more libertarian choice for president.
Or at least a choice that we probably want to live with more than Hillary. Really, that's like my argument.
And how are you going to lay that one out, sir, for the listeners? So just in case anybody's getting ready to throw their MP3 player or something, so you know, I. But oh, what the heck was that? Okay, apparently Siri is still trying to.
Maybe she should turn it off entirely.
Yeah, she's trying to shut this down. She does not like the mention of Trump.
That's quite possible. Even inanimate objects are appalled by Trump. I wouldn't put it past anything. It's been a weird goddamn year. Yeah. But okay, so I'm gonna start with the anti-Hillary part of the argument because it's a lot easier to make and a lot simpler, and people basically already think it. Hillary is of the left. Her plans are basically socialism or fascism. To regulate, control, or shill for Wall Street, and to put more power in centralized government. That's what she will do. That's what her history has shown us that she will do. That's what her platform shows us she will do. And that is what basically Obama has done. So we have no reason to suspect that there will be anything different from Hillary's side. With Donald Trump, we can see two things. Donald Trump of today is not the same Donald Trump that stood on that stage and said that illegal immigrants are rapists and murderers. Or at least that among them are rapists and murderers. Which means, at the very least, that Trump has the capacity to accept input and change himself. Or at least change how he presents his view. I believe personally that Trump is a lot more transactional than Hillary in the way that he understands how market forces work. He understands that people like him and when he does what people like him more, and he wants to be liked because he's a celebrity and that's his currency. Affection and fame is a currency of a celebrity, so he wants to do what people like, but he doesn't want to do the exact same thing that his opponent does, and he doesn't want to lose the people who he already has supporting him, which is why, even though he learns and he's manipulable, and he can be taught the wrong things as well as the right things. When the question came about the deportation force and the immigration stuff, the quote-unquote softening and hardening and other yucky metaphors, what he basically did was refrain from changing anything about his rhetoric, so that he can maintain his base, and yet change just enough so he won't be forced to do stuff that he can't really try to do once he's president, or stuff that really really irks the closer to center part of Republicans. All this means, in my opinion, is that sufficient pressure on Donald Trump from libertarians might be capable of moving him towards more libertarian policies, whereas with Hillary Clinton, no amount of pressure from us will ever move her towards libertarian policies. And an additional advantage that Trump gives libertarians specifically is that it ruins any legitimacy the Republican Party has as a conservative or libertarian party. It has not been for a long while. There are like 5 senators, 5 congress, and 10 congressmen who are all libertarian in philosophy, and even those are much more Milton Friedman type minarchists than what you or I would say is like closer to the core of libertarianism. Mm-hmm. And if we can destroy the image of the Republican Party as the party of liberty and make it absolutely clear to everyone that the Republican Party is and has been for a long time the party of nationalism, then maybe we can make a true party of liberty. Whether it's the Constitution Party, the Libertarian Party, or whatever other name it needs to take up, obviously the Republican Party has not been home for true libertarians for a long, long time.
Yeah. I mean, as soon as the whole Ron Paul thing was done, I was like, well, there it goes. There was the chance for liberty to be as effective at that level as possible right then to me. I was like, oh, well, there we go. We'll see how it's going to be useful.
Well, yeah, he definitely gave it a good goddamn shot.
Yeah. And but
I don't know that he would have been able to fight against Obama.
No, I don't think so either.
In 2012, but you know, for what he could have done, you know, he's basically, hopefully Ron Paul was modern day Barry Goldwater.
Yeah.
And hopefully we'll have a Ronald Reagan, just less statism and possibly not Alzheimer's this time, please.
Yeah, for real. Well, it's definitely not Gary Johnson, so well, he is going from that anyway. But
it's. I'm really hoping for a Jason Stapleton ticket eventually. I like that notion. I like someone who has liberty as a primary political value. And I don't know that most people have that. Certainly, most people who are as full of vim and vigor.
Yeah.
As one might say. Well, you know, can't make a dude do what he doesn't want to do.
Well, yeah, that's true. I mean, and at this point, I think we probably should still be focusing more on getting more people into local office than anything. Because, I mean, people keep saying they want an outsider. I mean, Trump is one of the ones that's an outsider when we say outsider when it comes to actually running for a political office, though, you know, he's kind of been had politicians around him for a long while, and Bernie Sanders is not exactly an outsider. That's like a manufactured outsider. But...
Yeah. Bernie Sanders, like... I can't believe that he used to think that it mattered that he was an independent.
No, they're just...
Basically, yeah, he's not a Democrat. He's a socialist. If there was a communist party that was actually effective in the United States, it would have been part of that.
Well, right now the Democratic Party is turning into the communist party the closer and closer we get. So, but mostly...
Well, I still think that we can say that it's the socialist party.
Yeah.
It is of the two remaining. But I don't want to remove anything of any responsibility from the Republicans because a party of liberty would not have... not have beaten down the anti-NSA program thing from like a couple years ago because it wasn't libertarian enough, the anti-NSA legislation that was running around back then.
Yeah.
That was started by Democrats. Whatever you want to say about them, they at least had the right idea then. And... Maybe because of pressure from the ACLU, because ACLU has a giant Democrat lobby.
Yeah, well...
I don't know.
The Republicans have some socialism in the party.
The only way to push... You're right that the only way to get a libertarian president is to start from the bottom. And besides which, the best way to prove that libertarianism works is from the bottom. Because it takes stuff like... like 12 years, 16 years to really take effect when it starts off at the federal level.
Yeah.
And so you really can't trace the efficacy of a policy, and people can take credit for stuff that they didn't even do.
Yeah, and could you imagine if, like, we have such status, like, stuck in the government should do everything, and somehow a libertarian got in there and didn't get assassinated? People would just hate the crap out of a libertarian at the top because they just would not understand, you know, what they just feel like, why is this...
They wouldn't understand why we don't have a federal Department of Education anymore. They wouldn't understand that we didn't need it, and we didn't need it when it was created, and we didn't need it now.
Yeah.
It's being born... It's kind of like being born with training wheels. Mm. But they're shitty training wheels. But you don't know how... But you don't... You have no idea how you're going to be able to walk if you don't have those training wheels on. It isn't until people cut off those training wheels they realize that you could have walked a lot better all along.
Yeah. It's a sad story. I mean, somehow I wish I had a fast forward button, either that or see in the future and see where we're at. So
I wouldn't want to see. I wouldn't want to look into the future. I'm too much of a pessimist.
Well,
but you know, I'm a pessimist, but I'm sort of a determined pessimist. I don't care that I think we're probably going to lose. I want to keep fighting anyway.
Oh well, I mean. At the efforts of all of us fighting while it seems hopeless, in the end is going to be something that will be helpful to children and future children, that the people who thought possibly everything was almost impossible were still fighting so that there was some effort towards liberty at that point. I mean, you gotta start somewhere, even though it sounds, you know, it's not easy now. Somebody has to see, they have to see an example, because... It's easy to fight when, you know, things aren't that rough and, you know, everybody's in there like, okay, everybody's doing it. But if somebody sees people pushing against the tide when it seems impossible, man, that's actually something, you know, to look at. And that's, who knows, maybe you might be able to push through at some point. You never know. You shouldn't stop just because, it just seems like it's impossible.
Yeah, but besides which, if libertarianism starts from a moral stance, then the only moral thing to do is to push libertarianism.
So, is that...
Okay, so go ahead. Sorry.
No, I didn't know if you were done. You can continue.
It was basically to try and reframe the same line, that liberty is the best way to get people to a better life. And so, pursuing liberty is the most moral choice out of the ones we're given. Government is the worst way to generate prosperity and the best way to generate destitute, a word. I think it might be. I think I might be using it wrong. English is a second language problem here. But, yeah, I think that the only moral thing to do, since we know the truth versus statism, is to keep pushing libertarianism and hope that maybe our children or our grandchildren or our great-great-grandchildren at some point can live, if not in an anarcho-capitalist world, at least in a minarchist world.
Yeah.
That's a lot freer and a lot safer than the world we live in today.
Yeah. And back to your... case for Donald Trump. Were there other points for that one?
Yeah, I love that he's pissing off the left and the media. I love it. Mm. I love that all the right people are getting pissed off for all the right reasons, because they've been corrupt for so long and been lying about their stance for so long that now, the main reason that I hope Donald Trump actually becomes the president of the United States of America is so that Bill Maher never shows a picture of an orangutan again on his show. I want the fear of the state to be instilled in the left, as it has been instilled in the right,
yeah,
maybe then we can convince them that libertarianism is the way to go. Because you can't let, I mean, you can't let Obama imprison people without cause. And pretend that when that's not going to be a problem for you when it's a Republican up there.
Yeah, it's just, and my favorite is, the left is, I feel like the left is rapidly approaching their time being up because they're pushing the limits way too far. I mean, everything's about race. I mean, I'm pretty sure that my couch is racist by this point, but I mean, the left is in a fervor right now that they, like, they're throwing around words like white supremacy and all that, and they're like, oh, you know, and my favorite, Hillary and her basket of deplorables, and then tries to back it up and doesn't even say, oh, yeah, I apologize for calling anybody deplorable. She said, no, only half of them are deplorable. And I'm like, that's wonderful. Which half are you talking about? Because there are, I've actually run into some black Trump supporters. I'm like, are you trying to say only the white people or the deplorable ones? Because, you know, here we go about this race thing, and it's just like, good yeah, lord, well, the left is losing it.
To be fair to Hillary, what she actually said was that about half of Trump's supporters are in the basket of deplorables. And afterwards, when she was sort of pressed on that, she said that her apology was, well, I shouldn't have said half.
Well, yes, I shouldn't have.
Which doesn't really matter, because the point is, you can't discount people who have a different opinion than yours when your opinion is evil, and expect them to come along.
I was like, seriously, it's just the left has gone, I think, way too far to the point where they're starting to eat themselves, and that's one of my favorite things to see these days, is the left eating them each other. Like yeah,
It's always fun. It was fun when we were from the left when the right was eating each other. It's always fun to see political rivals wasting energy on the wrong opponent.
Yeah. And still, for the life of me, it's like the cognitive dissonance is so thick, they can't realize, you know what, when we start turning on each other, we need to step back and reassess things. Nope, they don't.
At some point, I'm going to have to, like, do a treatise or a monologue about what I think is, like, the core issue that makes leftists leftist. And I think it is a strong sense of justice coupled with a complete lack of patience.
Yes, and believing they have the moral high ground for everything. It's, yeah, that too.
There has never been to me anything more infuriating, and this has happened every conversation I've had with my leftist friends. Every single conversation at some point came to me saying, I can't believe you have these opinions and you think you have the moral high ground. And mm-hmm. them saying, I don't think I have the moral high ground. I have the moral high ground.
They say it.
I have never been more angry about a person so wrong in my entire life.
Oh, man. And, you know, you wish there was some sort of humility there, but it's, I'm not even kidding, it's not even just one leftist. I'd run into it all the time. I do have, you're like, you really just said you had the moral high ground. You're like, there's no humility in your soul anywhere.
Yeah. And the shameful part of it is that I remember being that person.
Uh-huh.
I remember responding to any claim contrary to what my orthodox leftist thinking gave me. Every contrary point was a lie, an obfuscation, an indication of deeper immorality, something of that sort.
Mm.
And it took a big fucking Milo in the face, really. I give the entirety of my conversion to Milo over on Dave Rubin's show. He's the reason that I started distancing myself away from the left. Especially his appearance with Steve Crowder in that college.
Yeah,
I
remember that one.
I remember. And that's where distance started to build. And I realized, oh, they're crazy. Yeah. And now I think, oh, I was crazy.
Yeah, that's the only reason I can be, you know, people's like, oh, you know, they try to tell, I'm like, don't, I'm like, I've been there. I'm like, I've definitely been there. I can corner the market in minority ability. I'm like, black, lesbian. Okay. Like, have the market cornered on the favorite groups of the left to pander to. And I'm thinking that, and you're just sitting there like, goodness, you're like, how in the world could I ever have thought that? And then you battle with other leftists, and it actually drives me more insane in writing than it does in person, because in person, you know, if they try to get in my face, you know, normally I can do the emotion thing with them, because, you know, and use facts, but since they're so emotional, I try to find the emotional aspect of the truth and the facts and try to reach out to them that way.
And if you're visibly part of a minority, it's probably a bit easier to get them to realize that, to get them to sort of back off their moral high horse, mm-hmm. because you're part of supposedly because you're maybe like an I don't know what's a female version of an Uncle Tom, but whatever that is.
No, yeah, it's still an Uncle Tom. You're just an Uncle Tom at all times.
But you're also actually part of that group, which is the reason Uncle Tom is a thing is because of cognitive dissonance.
Mm-hmm.
And like one of my favorite Milo lines, and I've long since incorporated into my thinking, is that to think that a black person needs to think a certain way, or that a Jew needs to think a certain way, or an atheist needs to think of things a certain way, is plain bigotry. Is nothing short of bigotry. Is discounting the person because of the color of their skin, discounting their opinion, their words, their objectives, their selves, their soul. Because of the color of their skin.
Yeah. And it's the word, I mean, now, the unfortunate thing is, when you get on Twitter and Facebook, it's just all sudden all bets are off for leftists. It don't matter that, you know, they're not face to face with you, so they can use their moral high ground no matter what your color is at that point.
That's true for anyone under 25.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, everybody under 25 is like, I'm going to be me no matter what. It doesn't matter. Keyboard warrior here, but my favorite is, you know, trying to go back in the past and go, man, I thought like this, because, you know, you could lay out the most cohesive, argument. It's not even drowned, and, you know, you're not even doing the libertarian beat you over the head with facts and stuff like that. You're just laying things out, you know, making it real, making it simple, and somehow they miss the entire point of everything and single in on something. You're just like, how in the world are we going to get through this cloud of cognitive dissonance? And I even see in libertarian circles, they all say that leftists are, you know, a lost cause. And I'm like, oh, that's where you're incorrect. I'm here. Like, so it's just, it takes a different kind of patience.
I don't buy that anyone is a lost cause. What I think is the problem is that it's a thing that I can't remember where I read this, but I read this a while ago, and it's a wonderful phrase. That a person can only see truth in their mind if they've already accepted it in their heart. So you can be as logical as possible. You can present a perfectly cohesive argument. If a person is not prepared to accept that argument, to entertain that argument, it'll never push through.
Yeah.
Which is why what we need to do is get people used to the notion, which is where, like, local politics comes in, and to show people bit by bit, wherever democracy turns into dictatorship, like, we call it fun days in the office, which is basically a day that we have a budget to go and do, and like do an escape room and go karting.
Mm-hmm.
And it started off like democracy. Very quickly, I managed to influence certain things in that and basically show to the people in my room how easy it is to basically make a democracy untenable, to influence it, to change it. And how the moment the vote went through, which also included a bit more basically gerrymandering, it turned immediately into a dictatorship of my coworker who was planning the entire affair. So opportunity that I get to show a small thing of government corruption, of where government puts its hands where it's not supposed to go, and the consequences are harmful. I keep harping on about the interest rate. I keep harping on about the instability in the market and quantitative easing, because I happen to work in a company that deals with markets and foreign exchange and equity and a lot of that stuff. So it's not just digging into people's brains. It also happens to be relevant.
Yeah. Okay.
But I do think that the way to get people to understand libertarianism starts small. It starts in convincing people to be suspicious of government, to see every act of corruption in government not as an accident happening in government, but as a natural consequence of its existence. And you can only do that by showing them in small doses what happens when people have power. And to me, I define power as the capacity to use force without repercussions. And I think that's the best way to get leftists or right-wing statists to understand that the state is something that is unnatural to us. It's something that we've elected to engage in during times where we could not be profitable or prosperous as individuals. And its time is past.
That's a nice way of putting it. Very nice way.
I hope so. I'm planning on doing a podcast on libertarian concepts myself, so I should be working on my oratorics.
Yeah, it takes some effort. I'm still trying that over 30 episodes in, so it takes a little bit of time. So now I know we were going all over the place, but were there any more points about Trump?
I don't know. He's a fun guy to look at. I think he might be a better president than any other person on stage right now. Maybe except for the Constitution Party candidate, but he has less than zero chance of actually making a mark. I think that whatever is going to happen, the next four years is going to be a really good opportunity for libertarians to pull people from the left if Hillary's elected, from the right if Donald Trump's elected. And we have to be really, really insistent but gentle, mm-hmm. and understand that it's basically an addiction. Government has made itself integral to people's lives, kind of like being addicted to a drug. And an addiction is not something that is easy to let go of. And it's hard for someone addicted to see the damage they're doing to themselves. So the first step has to be to show that it's a problem. And you have to be patient, and you have to be kind. Because that's the only way to get through to people.
And, of course, one final note on that one. I still find it fascinating that with this opportunity that the Libertarian Party said they had with Johnson and Weld, all they really had to do was stick to, you know, even moderate views and could have done something, because if they would have paid more attention to the fact that people were more just affected on the Republican side than they were on the left, they probably would have made more sense to try to grab the conservatives as opposed to the people on the left. But nope. I guess they didn't want to try that method, because there were a bunch of never-Trumpers that were looking for something. And they almost had it at the beginning where people were coming over, even though the never-Trumpers were just people that I'm pretty sure were going to just jump right out of the party as soon as, you know, the election was over and all that sort of thing. But they decided to lean a little too left, because so many people were saying, I don't even understand why they were trying this whole left-right paradigm in the Libertarian Party. But they decided to say, it's time for the more left part of the paradigm, you know, the conservative side, their time is over. But then they ended up crashing and burning because they didn't realize, you know, you should be just telling people about freedom and liberty, and you probably would have gotten some disaffected people as opposed to the method they chose.
Yeah. It's, you can't convince people to join you on the basis of fringe benefits. Not if they're principled in their position. You won't get people on the left to join you if you're anti-social justice just because you're going to promise them some subsidies. And you're not going to get people from the right to join you if you have no understanding of liberty just because you're going to promise them that you're going to lower taxes or you're going to maybe manage to remove the income tax and replace it with the fair tax proposal. It's just, you change people's mind by having principles and sticking to them.
Yeah.
Other than that, it's just trying to appeal to people's id, which is what Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump have done this election. And it just so happens that the id of the right has been far less indulged in the last 8 years, in the last 16 years. And so that id is a lot stronger.
Yeah.
And it carries a lot more weight. That's at least my opinion.
Yeah. So do you have any other points? We're getting close to an hour, and I know we weren't going to go over that.
Yeah,
so.
I think we wanted to talk a bit about the alt-right, but I think mentioning Pepe is probably more than enough for that one. Because this is stretching a bit, and I want to keep something in my satchel for next time. If you want to have me on again?
Oh yeah, we can definitely talk about the next time you're on. I always want to have people on, and that's definitely a pretty broad topic that I'm pretty sure we're not going to hear the end of this cycle, yeah. Because it's going to. I mean, obviously with Hillary talking about it and Rachel Maddow talking about a cartoon frog, we'll have plenty to talk about for another episode.
Yeah, definitely.
All right, so do you have any... I know you said you haven't started your podcast yet, but is there anybody... Like, if you want somebody to follow you, are you just going to wait until you start the podcast, or is there any way anybody can follow you now?
Well, I do have a Twitter account, so it's at R-A-N-H-A-R-P-A-Z. And I use Z because my English education is British, sadly. even though I have a fully American accent, it's a somewhat of an affectation.
But everybody's like, why can't I find him? I can't find this guy. But he said it's Zed.
Where is Zed on the keyboard?
Yeah, where is this thing?
It's right next to the X.
How do you say? So
who are you looking? eventually, my podcast will probably once I figure out what order I want to do the episodes in, stuff like that. It'll probably be at speaking-liberty.net. Right now it's just a cover page, for some reason with a picture of a kiwi. speaking-freely.net. And I think runhardpause.com also directs there. So, any of those.
Okay. All right. And as usual,
not particularly fascinating right now.
Well, the kiwi is.
the kiwi is really weird. I mean, it's just, it was the initial cover page, and I said, okay, maybe I'll switch this to something a bit more free speechy, a bit more libertarian, maybe find, like, the American flag, and all the quality of the images that they had for some reason was really, really crappy, and so I said, hell, I'll just keep the kiwi then. At least the kiwi looks good.
Yes, kiwi is good in my mind. I like kiwi. It makes me think of freedom and cocktails. So
I keep thinking of the bird. Because I always keep thinking that, yeah, the kiwi bird sort of looks like a kiwi fruit with a beak. That's always been the connection in my mind, and I can never really explain why.
Well, that's a better reference than mine. It was only going to go out to the few MMA fans, like, every time they would go out and, you know, like Goldie, Mr. Goldie, when they would be announcing, and they'd get over in that part of the world, and he would start calling the natives Kiwis, trying to sound like he was cool. He was like, no. I was like, Mike Goldberg, you're such a nerd. Stop calling them Kiwis. You just sound really, come on, dude. Yeah, stop. But
yeah, that's, there are words that should not be said. There are phrases that should not be said by white people. And as a white person, and Kiwi should probably be some of them.
But it's just really funny to just say it the entire broadcast, and I was just like, I don't know why this sounds so weird. But whatever. All right. Well,
okay.
For anybody, of course, to reach the podcast, you can find us on Twitter at Newborn Liberty. If you want to shoot us an email, newbornlibertarian@gmail.com. You can find us on Facebook. You can find us on Stitcher and Google Play and iTunes and maybe some other places, because apparently we somehow appeared on Podbean. I don't know what that's all about. But all right, until next time, thank you for being on the show, and we'll have you on again. But until next time, everybody, be safe, spread some liberty, and let's just hang on during this crazy election and hope the world doesn't implode yet. All right?